Rents are crazy. Let's talk about that.
You are about to hear the opinions, suggestions, and observations of a licensed real estate broker in California. Since each situation can be unique, do not consider anything said here as legal advice for your specific needs. Always seek out the advice of a suitable professional in your area for advice tailored to your situation. Please remember that when following advice, your results may vary. Please also understand that the information provided here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the speaker considers important.
Ah! You seem to understand. I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name's Robert Whitelaw, and I am the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California. Member of the National Association of Realtors, but please don't hold that against me. It's Friday, folks. Welcome to it, the end of the week. I did promise 5 shows a week, so we'll also be doing a show Saturday morning because, you know, I'm a man of my word, so if I say 5 shows a week, I'm going to do 5 shows a week. I almost don't even want to admit why the show didn't happen this last time. I've been trying to take my own advice, right? if there's one great thing about doing this show, you get out here, you say things, you're trying to help people overcome things, and I'm not sure you realize this because this is an audio medium. I'm not a pretty man. I'm what you might call a fatty. I'm a pretty good chunk of weight, overweight. So I decided on Tuesday, I'm done. I would rather be around for a very long time to see my kids grow up and have kids of their own and be healthy and all these other kinds of wonderful things. And I took my own advice and I recognized my own limitations in this area. So I've enlisted the help of some friends to keep things going. And so we went and we worked out on Tuesday. Great. No big deal, right? Wednesday felt a little achy. Not too bad, but I thought, oh, if this is as bad as it's going to be, no worries. Yesterday, I was invalided. The second day after the workout is the one that killed me. I couldn't even touch my nose or my ears. I couldn't bend my elbows. It was very pathetic, if I'm being honest. So, and I hate to admit that it completely had me not interested in sitting here and trying to move a microphone around or anything, but that's how it went. So I... But on the upside, I did work out again today, right? So it's going to be 3 days a week. And this time I pushed through. I didn't have access to my friends, so did it on my own. So pushing full speed ahead. So there's that. Today we're going to spend some time talking about rents because it's not just about how much people are paying for rent, right? It's not a simple equation of how much does rent cost in place A, B, and C. It's one element. It could potentially be a ton of different decisions depending on where your mind is. So let's say you're someone with absolutely no money to put down on real estate. You're not going anywhere in terms of buying a place for whatever reason. Maybe your credit rating is absolutely horrible. You have absolutely zero money saved up. In that case, I would strongly suggest you at least pursue a lease option. Please check a couple of weeks ago. Did a show on lease options. Lease options are awesome, and they are a great resource for folks who don't have the cash right now to buy a home, but it serves as a great tool to lock in that price or lock in that opportunity for a period of time. But it helps you decide where you're going to live by what rents are being charged, right? Maybe because rents are so crazy in one place, you need to start looking to live somewhere else because it's too much of your monthly income for it to make any reasonable sense. If you it's important for you to, if you are in a position to buy, to do that math and figure out if it makes sense to rent or to buy. But also understand you need to put a financial value on locking in your housing costs, right? We've talked about that. I'm still a big believer that there's a huge value in locking in what your housing is going to cost you on a month-to-month basis, even above and beyond what your cash flow is per month. Because remember, no caps. If your housing costs aren't frozen, that means you can count on them going up every single year. You can bet that your landlord is going to do everything they can to keep the rent at least at the pace of inflation. So that means in order for you just to break even every year, you have to get a raise at the rate of inflation every year to accommodate the increase in rent, right? That's not likely going to happen, frankly. And we can also talk about the under-reporting of what inflation really is, because they no longer track like fuel and food, as if we can all survive without fuel and food. So in any event, and then the next thing is, what if you're an investor? Well, rents are important for you to know, because you need to try to figure out how much you can rent your properties for, right? So it's an important number for everybody to know, not just for somebody who's potentially going to be renting that apartment downtown, but somebody who is trying to figure out how to create a quality of life, or maybe you're trying to plan ahead and say, you know what, I want to be able to save in order to make that purchase someday, and I can't do it paying the rents I'm forced to pay where I currently live. So that means you need to sort of broaden things out. Maybe consider other communities where you could move, where your pay wouldn't go down, but the amount you'd pay for rent will go down. I encounter that very frequently. I know a lot of high-tech folks who have moved out of California to move to other areas where they're making very near what they make here, but they're doing it in Texas, or they're doing it in Denver, or they're doing it in Charlotte, North Carolina, or so the costs for them to get housing are much less where they're going, but their pay is staying relatively the same. Or maybe they're getting a pay cut, but it's nowhere near what they're saving in rent, so they're actually pocketing a lot more. It's about that end of month cash flow, right? And particularly at Texas, where there's no state taxes, right? So you leave California, suddenly you're not paying all these state taxes, which is, you know, comes nudging up close to 10%. So there's all kinds of money that you can potentially save if you've got the information, right? That's what we talk about here, trying to crank that knowledge equation up to 11. Take that knob, crank it over so that you can start getting a knowledge infusion that'll help you make better decisions. All right, so I thought what we'd do is sort of take a survey of the land first. The first thing I wanted to hit is that we are now at an absolute record for rent. Folks in the United States have never paid this much for rent before. And I suppose, you know, we'll look at the numbers here in a second, but you know, rent obviously is going to fluctuate a little bit, but it's always going to trend up, right? But let's also remember this. And this is a lesson that anyone who's been alive for the last 15 years should know. A, what goes up can come down, and all things that do go up eventually do come down, no matter what all the pros say. If the downturn in the real estate market in 2007, 2008 didn't prove that to everyone, I don't know what can. So this idea that rents are going to stay super high forever is ridiculous. Now, I still believe that investing in rental incomes is a good move, but you need to do it with a window of understanding that there will come a time when rents go down. Maybe less because they're going to go down for, you know, market reasons or home value reasons or anything like that. They're going to go down simply because you're not going to be able to find folks who can afford the rent. There comes a point that it's always a supply and demand equation, but beneath the whole the desire of someone to rent a home is the ability. So there's a second level of supply, which is the cash those folks have to spend. And if it gets to a point where they simply don't have the money and your place is not rented, well, then we start getting into that position where we need to stop dropping our rents until we can find someone who can rent the property from us. Right now, renters can expect to pay 30.2% of their income on rent. In my opinion, That's nuts. Now, also what's interesting is, you know, I've talked to loan folks before. It's the folks are actually okay with you paying up to 30 to 33% apparently in a mortgage. So at least under that equation, you know, you can claim you're getting some equity and you're protecting yourself from increases in rent and that sort of wonderful thing. But according to Zillow, 30.2% of your income. That's the highest percentage ever. And they have data. This is considering data going all the way back to 1979. Most folks can, now the one reason why they're making such a big deal about this is from an affordability standpoint, anything past 30% has been considered by the eggheads in the various economic schools of thought to be beyond affordable. 30% is a maximum affordable proportion of your income that you should pay on rent. Now, between 1995 and 2000, renters – now remember, this is taking – since this is all based on income, we're sort of normalizing it, right? We're – since it's a percentage of what everybody makes, we're ignoring the actual $1,000, $2,000 dynamic. We're just using it as a comparison percentage-wise to your income, which really helps to normalize it, which is helpful, but is also annoying because since it's a percentage, then with them saying this is the most folks have ever paid, that is a big deal. Now, of course, this is just since 1979. So take that for what it's worth. People have been paying rent for houses and apartments for a lot longer than since 1979. So there may be some time in the dark history. It wouldn't surprise me if there was a time when folks were paying a heck of a lot more for housing. I could easily see that being a thing that happened in the Great Depression and that type of thing. Just because of the small amounts of money people were making, it wouldn't surprise me if far more than 30% was going towards housing. Between 1995 and 2000, as I said, renters were paying just over 24% of their income on rent. So a substantial increase. We've basically seen more than a 6% increase in what folks are paying. And if you just take 6% of what you make every year, that's a good chunk of change. Rental affordability worsened in 28 of the 35 metro areas. It remained especially poor in the New York area and pricey West Coast cities. Los Angeles renters could expect to pay 49% of their incomes in rent. San Francisco wasn't that far behind it with 47%. Even New York and northern New Jersey, long considered pricey places, the rent affordability has worsened significantly. Renters in the city historically paid about 25% of their incomes on rent, and they now pay 41%. So we're seeing, at least in all the metro areas, and remember, not everybody lives in a metro area. That's obviously where the biggest concentration of people are. And of course, that makes sense when you've got all these people shoved into a city. That dynamic happens, that more folks are looking for a place to live and that demand causes the price to go up. But what I wanted to also cover here was sort of the list of cities with the highest median rents for a one-bedroom place because these numbers are a little bit nuts. Number 10 on this list – and one reason why I'm covering this is there's two ways we can think of these numbers. Once you get these in your head, what I find interesting is that nothing in the Midwest except for Chicago is on this list. It's very clustered around the Bay Area, the Pacific Northwest, the Northeast, the DC area, and Miami. Nothing in Colorado, Arizona, Nevada, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Tennessee. None of these places seem to be falling into this. I mean, if I can get my hands on the full list, I'd love to see what the median rent is in some of these other areas. But it's an absolutely nutty number. So remember, we're talking about this is one bedroom medium rents, and this is taken for July of 2015. Number 10 on this list. Seattle, Washington, $1,550 a month for a one-bedroom place. And I'm guessing by one-bedroom they mean an apartment, so not even a house. Los Angeles, California, $1,750. Excuse me. Oakland, California, $1,850. Miami, Florida, number seven on the list, Miami, Florida, $1,880. Tied with Chicago, Illinois, $1,880. Washington, D.C., number five, $2,170 for a one-bedroom place. San Jose, California, the closest to where I am, I'm in South San Jose if I head north for about 15 minutes. That's $2,180, and San Jose is number four on the list for a one-bedroom. Boston, Massachusetts, $2,230. New York, $3,100, again, for a one-bedroom. And this is the median. San Francisco, California, number one, $3,500 a month for a one-bedroom place. Even down here in modest little Morgan Hill, I have a four-bedroom house with a bonus room that could easily be a bedroom. It just the reason it's not officially a bedroom, it doesn't have a closet. I could rent this for between $3,800 and $4,000 a month. Still being this far away from the heart of Silicon Valley. And that's crazy. It makes me want to move out and find someplace else to live and rent this place because of the great positive cash flow that I'd enjoy. Let's see. So San Jose rents increased 2.8% just in June. Washington, D.C. prices went up 3.3%, but it still has a lower median rent at $2,170 for one bedrooms. Chicago and Miami have also seen increased rents, but it's not all bad news. Oakland, while still one of the most expensive, has seen rent decreases, as have Denver, Minneapolis, and Baltimore. And then it depends on the areas, of course. It can all be very dependent just on the micro market, right? So within San Jose, there are going to be some places with profoundly lower rents just because they're just less desirable to live in. But these are all numbers I want you to pay attention to depending on what your needs are. If you're someone who just needs to live somewhere and you want to live somewhere safe, maybe you have a child, you need to look at your options. If you're trying to prepare for the future, paying a ridiculous rent isn't helping you do that. Let's see here. What else have we got? I wanted to go through – I've also got a list of just headlines, right? Because I want to give you an idea of how widespread this is. Brooklyn and Queens, rents continue to break records. Housing and rental rates continue to rise in Ames, Iowa. Housing inventory tight for buyers and rents continue to rise. That's one about the country in general. Historically unaffordable rents in Dallas. Lancaster County rental market is at a crisis stage. And then there's some stuff about other countries that I don't care about relating to this problem. But the point I'm trying to make is get to know what's going on with rents in your area. This can be a great opportunity for folks who have the resources to get into the market to provide housing and generate a little positive income from the effort. And this doesn't necessarily mean you have to be – and again, it's so much easier for investors, right? There's no emotional thing. When you're in and that's actually the number one skill that an investor needs to learn. You don't buy a house you want to live in. You buy a house that you're going to rent. And as long as the math works, everything's fine. All you have to do – is you can use the program I use, and I'd actually love to get these guys on the show, Property Evaluator. I'm not sure if there's a Windows version of it. I use it on the Mac. Let's see. Wasatch Digital Media is what it says in terms of the credits. But it's a great application where I put in all the information on properties I'm considering buying and using as a rental. I'm able to put in my down payment, what my loan details are, some basic information about the property itself, all the expenses, all the income. And if you don't want to spend money, you can use the Google online spreadsheet and simply list all the expenses and list all the income related stuff and figure out if it makes sense for you. And the bottom line is if it's making you money, then if it's in the green, then it's probably a good call. The dispute then comes down to how much of a return on your investment do you want? And that's basically you take the amount of money that you've got into it in terms of the purchasing cost, the down payment, any money you spent on updating the place. And then you figure out how much money you'll make per year. And then you calculate the percent return on your investment. And a lot of investors I know shoot for 10 to 12%. Start out investors, I think anything at 5% or better is great, because you're, as you learn how to do this more and more, you're going to get better at making that number go higher. But the bottom line is anything at that level is going to be good for you. If you're making money, you're doing well. And I know some folks who are even willing to take a little bit of a loss, because one cool thing that you can do is also project forward and try to calculate how much you'll raise the rents each year and figure out at what point you actually start making money. And if it's within a certain period of time that you consider reasonable, then maybe it's worth doing. If you're confident that the property values are going to go up, if you're confident that you'll be able to continue to raise the rates of rental. I know I have a great friend who's in the Navy who pretty much everywhere he got stationed, he bought a house and kept it. And he has one down in San Diego where for the first few years it was negative cash flow, but it went positive, and it's been positive ever since. And it even stayed positive right on through the downturn. So, you know, he's not unhappy at all with the fact that he paid had some negative cash flow on that unit in the beginning, because it's turned out to work out really well for him. And then I think I've covered pretty well what buyers need to be thinking, or what folks who are looking for a place to live need to be thinking. For folks who are interested in selling, I don't really think this plays anything into you, really. Maybe knowing the local rental market, if you've got a home that tends to be at the lower price point, if you're having trouble selling your home, maybe you're in one of those marketplaces where things aren't going crazy. This information about rentals is very helpful for you. You find out where the most expensive rents are. Figure out your house. Figure out a reasonable financing situation for your house. See, this is a great strategy for sellers to use if you happen to be in a marketplace where things aren't selling that well. Get your realtor to get with a lender, or get with a lender yourself and say, I would like you to run some sample loan scenarios on this house. Then you find out where people are paying the amount that would be the monthly payment in that mortgage, the same amount in rent, and you sell them on the idea of their first purchase. Right? Let them be a first-time home buyer. Approach vets. Vets get great loans. I have had 100% success with every veteran, with every VA loan I've done over the last 2 years. And I've done a few of them. I've done more than the average realtor. So, you know, you can approach those folks as well. So from a standpoint of a seller, it becomes an issue if you're already having trouble selling, if you're in a crazy market where there's multiple offers going on. But, you know, with all the data we've covered over the last week, things are going to get tighter. So while in the hot, molten center of this lunacy where homes are still going for above asking price, the further you get away from those places, the more likely it is that maybe it's a little bit more of a challenging market for you sellers trying to get those places sold. So do a direct mail piece to an apartment complex where people are paying about the same they would pay per month if they bought your house. I think that's a fantastic strategy. It's a strategy I've used on homes I've been marketing when times are tough. Another great way to go is, and again, do this working with your real estate agent. You can get a list of all the homes that are not owner-occupied. And by figuring out where those homes are, get an idea of what they're renting for. And again, do the same thing and then do a direct mailer to those folks. Because if the mailing address for the tax information is a different address than the home's address itself, you know that's not owner-occupied, right? So you can send mail to those folks at their actual mail address. You could either send it to you'll have both, right? You'll have the actual property address, and you'll also have the owner's address. Don't see a lot of payoff in unless you want to sell it as an investment property. Don't see a lot of payoff in terms of sending it to the landlord, but you send it to the occupant of that property, and oftentimes you can get a list that'll actually have the name of the person who lives there in addition to the name of the owner of record. Really depends. I've had it go either way. But in any event, you want to send it to those folks and see if you can't find someone who hasn't realized that they could basically be paying the same amount per month, but be paying into a house where they're going to be getting equity in it and being able to freeze their housing costs. And use the same points I've brought up here as motivating factors on why they should do that. Now, again, buyers, we've already talked about you doing the math. If you're in a point where you're paying some crazy percentage of your income to your rent, change your situation. You don't have to just sit back and let it happen. I still believe that it's worth trading a longer commute for lower rent. I think that's a smarter move for you. Be willing to downsize. Be willing to trim off square footage in favor of putting more money in the bank. And having some sort of a plan where at some point you're able to get your housing costs locked in. Even if it comes to you buying that goofy condo that was once an apartment that got converted into condos. And as far as investors are concerned, rents are absolutely a strong indicator for you to decide whether or not you want to purchase a property in certain areas. Finding out what properties rent for, and there's a great tool. It's something another thing I want to do a show on is the Rents something or other, Rents Pro, or it's something I evaluated with my own property, and it actually looked really good in terms of giving a ballpark of what you should expect to pay. Rent Facts Pro, that's what it's called. I knew I had it around here somewhere. It's under my list of cool stuff to look closer at. And you can run a free report. So if you head on over there, your first report is free. Maybe you make it a property you already know really well, so you can kind of guesstimate or get a good indication of how reality-based this thing is. But check it out. It's www.rentfaxpro.com, and it's going to give you a great insight. Now, if you're an investor, this is a tool you may want to pay for and have access to all the time. If you're a real estate professional looking to do property management, this could be a great tool for you. If you are a renter right now, this could also be a great tool for you to figure out if you're paying too much rent right now, and maybe even find areas still within your community where you can rent for quite a bit less. So it's a great tool. I suggest everyone goes and takes it out. These guys aren't sponsoring the show. No one has. I think I got an email from them asking me to check it out or something. They may have asked to be on the show or get interviewed or something. But I haven't responded to them yet. And after checking it out, I decided it was pretty awesome. So they may be folks we'll hear from in the future. But the point here also is I don't see this dynamic changing anytime in the near future. I think we are going to be stuck with relatively high rents for a while. There's absolutely a cap on how high they can go, and eventually they will go back down. And we know what does that, right? Does everyone remember what rental rates were doing in San Francisco and San Jose just before the downturn? Vacancy rates were less than 1% at one point in San Francisco. It was crazy. And then when things really went nuts, suddenly vacancy rates were 10%, 12%, right in that ballpark. So I'm not telling you that by doing this, you are securing decades of potential income. It's really going to depend on how you buy. You make your money when you buy your property, not when you sell it. So if you buy it right, then you could potentially make money on it for a very long time. And it depends on how leveraged you are. If you're very close to market value and what you owe on it, you may have a tough time. But run again. The investment side of it, run numbers. It's really just calculations. It doesn't have anything to do with what you feel good or bad or good about or bad about. It's about what the market will bear in terms of rent, and it's about what the income and an expense picture is. So you can check that out. You know, maybe what I'll do, if folks are interested, I'd be happy to dig up or put together a spreadsheet that you can use that you can maybe import to Google spreadsheets or whatever, or maybe, I don't know, can you subscribe to that stuff on Google? Maybe I'll see if I can put something there, but I'd love to be able to give you just a basic thing, or maybe a quick, would that be valuable to everybody? A quick free downloadable PDF that it basically gives you the instructions on how to create your own. Would that be good? Let me know. Give me some feedback. I'm finally getting some people emailing me. I got a great email today from someone. They didn't give me a name. It was one of those weird, you know, those weird truncated sort of things that you'll put into your email address, saying they like the new format of the show. Fantastic. Glad to hear that. I've had a few of those, so I feel like we're heading in the right direction. And again, I want to thank you all. The numbers are still looking good. We are still not off of Blog Talk Radio. That struggle continues. I am stunned at how intentionally difficult they clearly make this. So I gave them a very clear statement of what I wanted to have happen and what the steps were, and got a response that indicated that the person who read it didn't read it or intentionally decided to act like they didn't understand it and said, well, because you said right here that you did X, Y, and Z, then clearly we are not in control of your RSS feed. Of course, that's not what I wrote, not what it said. Went back and reread it 10 times, couldn't figure out how it could be misunderstood. So I replied with a very – with a please let me clarify response and basically put the bullet points and finished it with, of course, you can ignore everything above and simply do this. Insert this line of code into my RSS feed and everything will be fine. So that's where we ended it today. It supposedly has now gotten re-forwarded back to the IT folks. And, of course, I had to respond back to Blog Talk Radio. They didn't proactively come to me and give me the status. I had to ask them today what the status was. And the response was, well, we can't do anything. You're hosed. And my response was, no, I'm not hosed. And here's what you need to do. So that'll clearly be something if we decide to do a show on setting up your own podcast, something I'll share. And the amount I have learned and how naive I was in some of the assumptions I made relating to various hosts really kind of came back to bite me. I even thought I built in the perfect way to prevent them from stealing my RSS feed. And I guess technically I was smart, but unfortunately iTunes later built in a feature to move your RSS feed that was controlled by what was in the feed. So since they put it into the feed at some point, they were able to hijack my feed. So now I'm trying to liberate it from them, but I think we've already covered that. All right, folks. Thanks again for listening. I do appreciate it. If you'd like to get in contact with me, head on over to therebelbroker.com. Things are going to be changing over there a little bit this weekend. Another thing I'm looking at doing is posting these shows to YouTube. I don't know how I feel about that. Like I said, I'm not a pretty man. So it will probably be video of me actually doing the show. But then the cool thing is, because this whole other thing I was trying to do with enhanced podcasts and having the cute graphs and things that I talk about from time to time showing up just isn't happening. It's not going to work. I'm probably going to have to hire a code guy to make it work if I want to go to that kind of trouble. So by doing it on YouTube, it gives you a very easy way to see it in that format so you can see that stuff. The other option is for me to simply copy and paste the graphs into just the post at my site. But I wanted you guys to be able to see this stuff on your mobile devices while you're watching the show. I didn't want you to be married to a desktop. So unfortunately, the only way it looks like I can do that is if I make it a YouTube thing. So that's a possibility. A lot of folks have been informing me that's a great way to increase exposure to a show. So I'm pretty much all in. That's going to happen. I actually already have a channel where I used to do market analysis videos every but it was like a presentation. It was very dry and unsexy for different areas that I serve. And I stopped doing that a year or two ago. But that channel is still there, and it's still up and running. So it's already past that time when you can post things as long as you want. There used to be a limit of, I don't know what it was, 15 minutes or 20 minutes or something. And now there's no limit on that account. So I'll probably just convert that over to being a Rebel Broker account just for the show so you guys can check that out there. All right. Once again, thanks for listening. And I will talk to you tomorrow.